Interviewed Tom Gordon, March 28th, 1985.
And Paul used to take his team, and Paul Wasilka used to go too.
Oh, Paul Wasilka,
and
yeah.
They used to go up across Deep Creek there.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
go up to Mickey Munson's cabin there, halfway to Collingwood.
On the river.
You
right.
know, when Mickey was on the telegraph line there.
Yes.
And they'd stay there and for a week, usually. And
This is a one horse affair? Or is that two? Would that be a two horse affair?
Oh, yeah. That's a sleigh. But
two. I can only see
the one. Yeah, you can only see the one horse there. But anybody you know? And that's the same outfit.
Well, that's Uncle Paul.
Yeah. That's Archibald Ford.
Oh, yeah.
That's Frank Faulkner. That's Dad. And this is still one. This guy here.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
That's one of their hunting expeditions.
What year is that?
That's the same expedition
that's
there.
That's the same expedition there. You couldn't remember what year that car would be. That's
well, it would be 28 or 29, Model A, I guess, in there somewhere. Because that's about the time that they used to go hunting there. And
so that would be in the 30s.
Eh?
That would be
so?
In the 30s sometime.
I remember Art's Model A's, and they were 28, 29.
I remember when they used to go hunting there. I remember those guys used to go hunting.
Yeah.
Is that right? Here's a picture of the refreshing.
Oh.
Now you must know this guy. That guy right there.
It's hard to
think
see.
Your neighbor.
Sid Tan?
Sid Tan.
Oh, yeah.
A great Sid Tan.
Now, did your dad, I understand he had one of the first thrashing machines in the country.
Well, he had, that was the first, about the first thrashing machine with a blower on it.
Oh, with the blower.
Martin Hines had the first thrashing machine.
Oh.
And, but from that thrashing machine, they used to have to fork the straw away from behind it. It had a conveyor on it with no blower, you know. And they had to fork the straw away from behind the machine. But this was the first one.
I see.
On this side of the river with the blower.
Well, and what type of model? What would that have been?
1925,
and who would have made this?
Harmon Garing.
McCormick
Deering. 1020 McCormick tractor.
Is he? I suppose your dad went around the country thrashing for people.
Oh, yeah. Well, he used to thrash till all winter.
All winter.
It was all stack thrash. Most of it was stack. Well, this wasn't stack thrashing. That was they were hauling it in and thrashing it there, but.
Stacked thrashing. I haven't heard that term. You mean people would stack up their grain?
Yeah.
Bundles. Of course, it was in
bundles.
Bundles. That's what you call them. Bundles.
And
I see.
But nobody had very many acres.
Well,
then,
that's
you know?
True.
And
that's true.
And there's no way one separator could get around to thrash everybody out of the field.
Uh-huh.
So they all stacked, and then they'd thrash all winter.
For heaven's sake.
One time he ended up there over at old Lady Micotavich's.
Mm-hmm.
And it was real cold weather, about 40 below.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out and started the tractor up in the morning and burned out a connecting rod.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, nobody knew anything about how to fix them, you know. So he had to go to town and get Ed Chaffrey. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
And Ed came out and put in a new bearing into it. They started it up and ran. So then he had to drive Ed back into town with the team, and he came back there again. And then the next morning they went to start it up, and it was so doggone cold they couldn't turn it over. You know, the bearing was a little too tight.
Yeah.
And so they had to take it all apart again and put in some more shims so that they could make it turn over. You know. But they used to have a lot of fun Art LaForte used to always kid him about thrashing for Mr. Mike Davich all winter, you know.
Wouldn't remember how much they'd get paid for something like that.
Paid?
Yes.
$2,400 for the outfit.
Okay. And how much would he make every time he went out to a farmer?
Well, he thrashed for 4 cents a bushel for wheat and 2 cents a bushel for oats. And the most he ever thrashed with that thrashing machine in a day that I can ever remember was up on your place, and that was 1,000 bushels in one day.
Really?
Yeah, that was the biggest day they ever put in. It was real good wheat,
well,
and it was for your dad too.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
For heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to ask you about my dad after. It was for my own personal interest, but. So what year, you wouldn't remember what year that would be then? That would be in the 1930s. It would have to be or in the late 20s?
It'd be in the late 20s because...
Was he married then?
Who?
My dad.
Yeah, yeah.
He was married.
Yeah.
Okay, so but my mother came in 1929, I thought.
Well, it'd be right in around that time.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Forget something about it.
Sorry.
But
I was going to ask, you don't remember the people who sold the farm to my father?
Sure, Finley.
I've got the wrong name. I was telling them it's McKinley yesterday. It's Finley.
I started to school him. He taught school at Fairhaven. He farmed.
Yes.
And he cleared land. He'd come home from
school,
and he'd clear land till dark, and. And then he'd go to school the next day, he started teaching there. I'd started school about 23, and he was my first teacher. So that's.
My goodness.
That's when he's.
Was he the first one to farm that land?
He homesteaded.
He homesteaded. I was wondering if there was anybody there before Finley.
No, he homesteaded it.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we learned, that's interesting. That's going to have to go into the book. That's interesting. Like, we have not, our David Gregory wanted to hear a little bit about the farming. I'm doing, like, a lot of about the farming in the area, and he wanted a lot of these little anecdotes, and like this thing about farming, thrashing at 40 below, that's, you know, something that we need to put in there. Unheard of, right?
They used to thrash
anybody
for near all winter,
until
February anyway.
My goodness.
Nobody had very many acres, they just had a few stacks, you see.
Yeah.
And
this is true.
But the problem was when it got deep snow to move around.
Yes.
There was no snowplowed roads or anything in those days either.
Which is this, the Fairhaven gang?
Yeah.
Gang is the word.
That's when Dick Weldon was teaching there.
Here's one with Dick in it too.
Dick Weldon would be how would he be related to the Weldons?
Well, he was a Weldon.
George.
This would be George's brother?
George's oldest brother.
Oldest brother. Yeah.
He
was a doctor.
Became doctor. Doctor of education.
Yeah. I see.
Special ed, I think.
I don't know. Any of these kids. That's Mary Burtis, I know.
Mary Burtis?
Yeah.
Oh, for
that's
heaven's
Lillian
sake.
Carter. That's Bill Richards. That's Jack Derbyshire.
That's a name we have.
They
lived in across the river here?
They used to live straight east of Mike Rogers there, a mile.
I've never heard the name, have you?
Right next to Art Cullen's place there.
Yeah.
That's Alois Burtis. And that's Bob LaPorte.
Who's the girl here?
Trying to figure out who that is.
That's Eugene.
Oh, he needs his glasses.
That's Evelyn, I think.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Is that right?
And there's Helen Burtis.
Helen Burtis. That is Mrs. Dorshenko.
Yeah.
And Bill, Al Richards, and Lou, Joe Burtis. John Gorman's. And this...
That's Mary Braden, I think.
Braden.
Yeah.
Another name we haven't heard.
Fred, she married Fred Nooks.
Phil Morley's wife?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, married Phil Morley.
You remember Phil Morley?
I guess you probably do. I think, well, Morley, I remember the name.
He's a truck.
Wilmer Morley's brother.
Yeah.
No, that name doesn't, Wilmer doesn't mean anything. He's been around here, he was, the Elf Staffs did it.
Well, Gene probably may remember more than I don't.
And,
they had a homestead up on the Collin Lake Road there years
see.
Ago.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's A.J. Gorman. It's dead.
No, that was good. I was thinking, is there
somebody from
the Gormans?
Oh,
of course.
And then there's the
news. My goodness. Quite the gentleman, I must say.
Good looking duck.
Look at that. When did your parents come? Well, they were in Nova Scotia.
No,
when they
Prince first, Edward Island.
Prince Edward Island, sorry. Prince Edward Island.
No.
When did they come to Prince Edward Island? Well, they weren't born there.
They were born.
Yeah.
Well, were they born there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the parents didn't.
Our forefathers came there, and I think Alfred said.
Well, you got, I don't know, we've got the family tree or somewhere.
Have
know.
You?
Yeah. They came, I think they said 1700s.
Really?
Yeah.
My goodness.
And so they came here. They came to Alberta.
Individually?
Did they?
They didn't know each other down there.
I see.
And Mom came out to go to Normal, I guess. In Calgary in 1905.
Well, there was no Normal school in Edmonton then?
No. Calvary. That was the first time I school in Alberta, that class.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Dad was, after she went to Normal, she was teaching at Morneville, and they met there at she was a Lavallee before she got married to old Monier, and Lavallee said they had the... post office in Morneville,
mm-hmm.
and Mom boarded at their place, you see.
Uh-huh.
And these two guys used to kick around together.
Well, here your dad wasn't farming at that time, then.
No,
he was
a livery.
Is that right?
Yeah.
In where?
Morneville.
In Morneville.
Yeah.
I see.
And then he started working, or he was working for the hotel down there, and they sent him up here to work in the hotel in Athabasca.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he happened to come up here.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no intention of farming here. But old McCullough, you know,
yes.
He was living out here then. He was one of the first homesteaders. And he used to go into town and meet everybody that came into the district and find them a farm for maybe $10 or something like this, you see. So he tells Dad that this quarter was open and he better take it. And so Dad figured he'd just take it and sell it to somebody and make a few bucks on it, you see. So he filed on it. And then after he was married, 1912, or before that, they built a house on it. A fellow by the name of Jack Traynor that homesteaded right across the road where Chester was off at new place there,
right.
You know, by
yes.
Todd Richards.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was Trainer's place, and that's the guy that built the old house over here for Dad.
Trainer, how do you spell?
Jack Traynor.
Jack Traynor.
I had a picture of him, but he's made
in
Nori.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Prince Edward Island
also.
Too.
Oh yes. What? Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Okay, so they built the house, and they stayed ever since then.
Well, he moved out here then, and been here ever since.
What reason did your dad have for coming here to begin with?
The hotel.
Well, he was working in the hotel, you see.
But why did he come out west?
What was he? Well, like not, your mother came to normal
there was
school.
There was nothing to do down east. There.
He came out on the excursion, you know, the farm excursion.
He first came out on a harvest excursion to Manitoba the first time. And he worked there that fall. And then he went back east. And then next time he came out to Calgary, I guess. And then he worked on a bridge gang through the province. And then he started working at the livery stable in Warrnambool. And then he started working for the hotel, and they sent him up here.
Okay, you go ahead and tell me about Bill Day here.
He was going across that coulee there just by your place there, you know, in the Willis Knight with the car he had. And he went over the bank there. You remember that old car that used to be down over the bank there?
No.
Wrecked?
No.
You don't ever remember seeing that? And he came tramping back up and knocking on the door here then, after that thing.
Sid picked him up. Sid picked him up.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. But this was, I don't know whether everybody figures that he ran the thing over the bank there on purpose.
On purpose.
You know, and sure didn't run her over the bank because there was no... absolutely no way anybody could have gotten out of that thing where it went down over there, you know.
What did he used to do? Oh, he used to go back and forth. He didn't have the mail or anything.
No. He just lived at the lake.
He used to be on the border, you know, as a
customs officer.
Really?
Yeah. In southern Saskatchewan.
Oh, I see.
Fish came up here. He had a string of horses and rode a white horse.
I think I
have
maybe to remember.
He had all purebred French and horses and registered cattle.
And then they went up there and most of them died. You know, they weren't used to the flies and all that sort of stuff.
Slew hay and stuff like that.
Who are the other two fellows here?
Well, that's Bill Garman and this is Art Cullen.
Oh, that's Art. I thought it was your dad here.
Okay. Bill is... Archie Gorman's brother.
I thought I had a picture.
Bill Gorman.
He homesteaded across the road here.
Where Alex is.
He used to run the ferry.
Oh, I think I remember him a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, sure. He was here when I was.
He used to run the ferry. Yeah.
I don't remember that, but I remember your dad's brother now. I think. Right. He was never married, was he?
No.
That looks interesting. Some kind of a lean-to or something. What is that?
What is that?
Well, it's up in the bush where we're...
Sawmill.
There's old Charlie Bissell right there.
Would that be a Bissell father to...
Buster.
Buster?
Yeah. There's Louis Sally and Randy Schulte and Ken Bissell and Sarge Bissell. And that's me. I don't know who's back in there.
That's at McCullough Lakes.
At McCullough Lakes.
Yeah, with three at his mill set up there. Oh, there's Melvin Sumner.
Melvin Sumner. From
junior or senior?
Senior. Must be senior, of course. How long did they have the mill there? Just a number of years, or was it over a period of time?
They moved it in there about
43.
In the 40s.
Therefore that.
Before that. 39 I worked there. Yeah. 39, it was on Kids Cabin Creek.
Yeah.
On 39, next year they moved it to McCullough Lakes, and then they put two mills in there for a couple of years.
Steam engine on that one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Threw the water out of the lake for the steam.
Be careful there, I didn't see all of those. There's a lot of lumbering. You don't have any pictures, or do you recall anything about trapping in the early days to kind of supplement the farm income?
No.
I remember my father used to go trapping.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something that you can put in there, that the fall catalog used to go down the get out telegraph poles on these trips to McMurray, you know? The line used to go through here. And he used to take contracts in the wintertime to go down there and make poles and distribute them all the way along the line, and then the next summer they'd build the
part of the railway again.
Rebuild the line, you see.
When would that be? What year is
and,
about?
In the
30s.
Yeah, I'd be in the 30s.
35, 36.
Because I remember he used to take about five or six men with him. And I remember one expedition he went on down there. It was for about 6 weeks. And I think that each man got $75 for the job. And that was a real good job because that was real good money in those times.
Right. Well, I remember. And yeah, go ahead.
So that would be something that you could mention about making money off
extra
the farm,
money.
You know?
Right. They used to, some of the people from north of the river here used to go make ties, railway ties, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I think there were, somebody was saying, I think it was, in fact, Mr. Lepezovic told us this story one Christmas when he was sitting and having a drink because he used to deliver eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they made 5 cents a tie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three of them went down the river somewhere, and one man would look after. Well, they had to build a lean-to of some type to live in for the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one man was responsible for getting the meals, getting the snow melted for water, and the other two fellows would be out working.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was cold.
Yeah. Well,
50 below.
In connection with that trip of Paul's down the river there, I remember one time he went down there. Well, I think it was the same year that I was talking about, and he wasn't finished with the job yet, and it was a lot of cold weather, and he ran out of feed for the horses.
Mm-hmm.
And he wired back, and they phoned, Jack Ashiger phoned out here, and he wanted me to go down, take some hay down to him, you know. Well, I was only, I don't know, I wasn't very old then, and I wasn't very...
anxious to
brave about taking a trip like that, you know. But and he said, well, if you can't go, he said, go and see your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And ask him if he'll come. So
my
went,
dad.
Your dad.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I went up and told your dad. And, he didn't, wasn't very fussy about going either. But he said, well, just about had to go because he was stuck, you know.
Right.
So he went and he took him a load of feed, and I was talking to him after he got back and telling me about the trip, and he got on the river, and there was a lot of snow, and underneath the snow there'd be water, you know, from these overflows, and he had a pretty heavy load, and then all the snow would push in front of the sleigh till he got stuck, and then he'd have to get out, unload the whole load of, well, they were bales,
right.
But he had to unload them, and he said he was up to his knees in water, and then make a road with the empty sleigh, and then circle around, come back and load this all up again, you know.
Yeah.
And he said he told me he just cried like a baby there, you know, all by himself, you know.
Honestly.
And I can understand it.
Now, how far down the river would he have had to go?
Well, he went to Pelican. And that's 100 miles, eh?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, he must have been gone for several...
Six weeks, I think that...
No, but I mean my
oh,
dad.
Your dad.
Yeah.
Oh, to go there and back, probably be a couple of weeks.
I would think so, you know? My goodness.
Because they'd only make about 20 miles a day,
right.
You know? So...
It stopped down there at... Pelican Rapids here,
mm-hmm.
where the gas come out of the water.
Oh, yes, yes.
They dry all their blankets out from the horses and all that, and the grass would be green around there and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Who used to live up there? The Newman? Was it Newman?
Yeah, Dick Newman.
Newman?
Yeah.
Didn't they say he used to have the best garden in
the
country?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, that's another, this old Art Cullen here.
Uh-huh.
He used to freight to McMurray in the early days. Before the railroad went into McMurray, he'd take flour and whatever they
needed,
you know?
Yeah.
And they'd go to the river here, and then they'd go after, when they came to the rabbits. Well, then they'd go overland to McMurray. You see, but he used to tell us about stopping there at the rapids and the horses would just be tickled to death to get in out of the snow where it was warm, you know. And he took a load of, one time he took a load of flour and sugar and stuff down to McMurray, and he brought back a load of this tar sand. And it was, they hauled it to Edmonton, and they experimented with it on the roads. That was the first time they ever used it. And that was, that had to be before the 20, before 1920, because he went away and he didn't come back. He went away and he did that before he went away. So it had to be before 1920.
Yeah. Interesting, interesting. What have you got here?
Well, that's it.
Well, that's that original picture, isn't it? One of your, this family affair here?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the old tractor. That's the first.
No, oh, yeah. Well, the dad, that's, do you remember the Sarge? That's Patsy Lasarge. She's,
well, you were just talking about her.
Oh, that's right. That's who it is, eh?
Yeah. And that's Bernard O'Fara. He used to be the station agent here, Mike O'Fara.
Is that right?
And that's they used to kick around here as kids.
That's before Patsy left here to go to the States.
Right. Oh, well, hey, she was just a kid.
She must have been. You had
a she was just a kid.
Yeah, you mentioned an Ashacker.
Jack Asher.
Jack Asher. Who is that? Barbara's father?
Yeah. He was a telegraph operator. Mm-hmm.
Was that, well, he wasn't an RCM, or Northwest Mounted Policeman then, was he?
No.
That was after he left the police.
Well, he was never in the
force. He was never an RCMP.
Barbara Ashacker's dad?
No.
Did I know?
Yes, he was.
Was he? Must be.
Oh, Thorne.
Oh, Barbara Thorne. Ashacker. Sorry, I've got the names mixed up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Thorne.
Yeah.
Barbara's.
Yeah.
That's what I think of course. Yeah. This is Ashacker.
Harold's
father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Now I got that straight. Yeah. I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I've got those because she married Harold there. That's right. So you people were born here, all of you, the family, because your mother and dad got married and lived here.
Mm-hmm. I was born here the night that the first doctor came to Athabasca.
My goodness.
Dr. Myers.
Dr. Myers.
He came here on the 3rd of April in 1917. And he came in on the train that night. And Dad went and woke him up. And
went down the wrong way again, didn't he?
Had to wake up the station agent to get his satchel. And we brought him out of one right here, out home here.
So this was wintertime, so that you could go down the river?
Yeah. Yeah.
It
was cold.
It was cold, eh?
Yeah.
What were the roads like then here in the summertime?
Well, there were trails. Sure.
Sure, when they come out here, they had to take the trees off the trail to come out.
Yes, true.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, we never had any decent roads here until about 1940.
I suppose, yeah.
That you could call, you're going through mud holes all the time, you know.
Yeah, but the road, this was the main road north here of the river, so all these people who trekked to Richmond Park and basically all these other places north would have had to come past your place.
Yeah.
That was the only, or the main.
Yeah, and then they went down by your place.
Is that right?
That was the main road.
That's the only way.
For a long time.
Over that coulee?
Over that terrible coulee.
Yeah. Till about... when did they make the road around by Big Coulee there? About 1935 or something like that.
Is that right?
Yeah. Before that, all the traffic to Collin Lake, but
past our place.
Right past your place.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When did the school? When did you say the school was built? First school here, the Perry Haven.
Well, Mr. Finley taught there in. About 1923, and there was two teachers before that. There was a Mr. May, and it was, but that was only for about 2 months in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't keep the school running in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah.
And another teacher by the name of Wolf taught there for about 2 months and another year. So I would think that the school was probably built about 1920.
Mm-hmm. No ladies were brave enough to come out here and teach. It was all men, I hear, I see.
Well, it was a long time before there was any women teaching there.
So then Big Cooley, for example, when would that have been built?
Early 30s.
And Miss Reynolds was the first one?
She was the first teacher. And I remember her father and sister brought her up here in the Model A to take her up to... Well, they came up one day to see the school after her application had been accepted. And they drove up there, and there was anthills all over the yard there, you know. And the old man told her that those were Indian graves.
Scared the dickens out of her to begin with.
Oh, dear.
She didn't turn around and go back.
No, she stuck it out.
Oh, dear.
Well, you went to school to her, didn't you?
But I was named after her. Because her name was Violet, and my mother told me that I was named after the first teacher that they had there.
You never went to school to her. Well, who was your first teacher?
Mrs. Day.
Oh, yeah.
Great one. Mrs.
Day. A while after that.
Okay, we're on. All right, so you people had the first telephone in north of the river.
Well, Todd Richards.
Todd Richards.
And Mrs. Belita and Gieselson's, I guess.
Monker Patrick.
Oh, yeah, Monker Patrick.
And then it went on to Golden Lake.
Oh.
There was two, Jim McIntosh had a phone at Golden Lake. But that was, these were not party lines.
No.
These were pay stations. You had to pay 10 cents a call. Local.
Mm-hmm.
Then your long distance would be
Everybody heard everybody's ring, though.
First thrash machine, first telephone. What else did you have first?
Well,
it's just because you're here so long.
Well, first, how settled would it have been then when your father came here? How settled would it have been?
That's when it was settled. It was settled better then than it is now. Every quarter was occupied.
Well, tell her the names
and
of the people.
Very few people had more than one quarter.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
And most of these people, I never knew it till a few years ago here, when. Harry Driver, I think I told you about that one time, but Harry Driver, he homesteaded Mike Cavlock's place. He was the original homesteader on that court. And he moved back to Ontario in 1920. And there was a lot of people in the district here then, but a bunch of them moved back there together at that time because there was no schools here, and there was no place for the kids to go to school, but they figured on coming back again, you know.
Oh, and they never did.
But this old Harry Driver, anyway, he, when Don McClellan was in the post office here, he wrote him a letter one time, and it must be about 20 years ago, maybe. And he wanted to know what it was like around Athabasca, and if there was any power across the river, and what. And then he mentioned a few names of the old-timers, like George McCullough and Archie Gorman and Todd Richards and... who else did he mention? Oh, some of the old timers, anyway. You want to know if there any of them were around yet? And so I was in the post office one day, and Don called me in and showed me this letter. So I said, I'll take it out to Dad and show it to him. And so I took it out and Dad read it. Poor Daddy never was much at writing letters. He used to write to this Jack Traynor that we mentioned a while ago. Every Christmas, they'd write each other a letter. And that was the extent of Dad's letter writing, you know. So I wrote to this old driver and told him, answered all, as many of the questions as he had asked, you know. Hell, I no more than got the letter in the mail than there was a letter back. One of the girls, one of his daughters, got a hold of the letter, and she wrote back, and she said that she used to, she remembered our family. They used to come here and play with us, you know.
Wow.
Well, I none of us ever remembered them, but I don't know how.
They remembered you. Right?
They remembered us, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So a few years later, a couple of years later, she turns up here, and or she wrote and she said that she was coming to see the old homestead, you see.
Yeah.
And so she came here, and it was right in the middle of the summer. And it was just raining to beat the band for about 4 days straight, and there was no gravel on the roads at that time, you know. So she had rented a car, she and her daughter came, and they had rented a car in Edmonton, and they were at the motel in town, so we went in and picked them up and came out and brought them out, and just, well, John took them up there. It was just plowing mud, you know, all the way up there. But they got up there and they showed them where the homestead was. And of course, that all of Mike's buildings were all
gone,
you know.
Right.
And the trees were growing up in the yard there. So it was kind of a desolate little place, you know. She was kind of disappointed in it. But anyway, she saw it anyway, you know. But all these people had gone back to Ontario about the same time, you see. And they were all related, too.
What were they?
This Sundines that lived down here at Brooks's. You remember Brooks's place?
Well, I remember Brooks's, yes.
Yeah, well, Sundine was the
original
homesteader there. And they were related to these drivers. And then there was another Frank driver. He lived on Frank Rajowski's place there. That he homesteaded that for him. And then there was a family of Johnsons that lived, I think, where Andrew, were across the road from Anton Burgess's there.
Oh, yes.
And I forget, well, of course, there was all these Thorns. Do you remember the Thorns?
Okay, so, you know, this is one of the things that David Gregory from the University of Athabasca wanted. He wondered what kind of people settled, and did they come like as a group? Like, now these names are all English names.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like in the late 20s and the early 30s, the whole influx, for example, Richard Parker, all these Ukrainian people that came from Europe.
Yeah.
And these are all Thorns, I remember, yes, they were near LaPorte Store.
Yeah. Well, they were English.
They were all English.
There was a whole family of them.
Is that right?
And
well, he came back here after that.
Well,
that
was Edgar. That was the young fella.
Yeah.
But these older ones, they were... The old man, there was the old man. He was responsible for building that first Anglican church up there. Not the where it is now,
right?
But in where Roberts lived there, you know.
Now that's another name I remember a little bit. Where is it?
Well, they lived Roberts. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it'd be straight west of Sid Tam's.
Okay, I know where you're talking about.
Well, that was where the first Anglican church was built.
Right?
It was a log building. And this old Thorn was the one that was responsible for building that. He and his family, you know.
You know, Jean's sister wrote a history about the Anglican church at Bay Coulee there, and I'm wondering if she knew, if she had that history in there. I'm going to ask her about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether they moved that thing to over to the new site or not. I'm not sure whether they built a new one there, but that was the first Anglican church there. And
so really, would that would have been the first church north of the river, would have it been?
I can't think of any others, really.
I don't know where else it'd be.
And
I suppose it was Anglican because a lot of the English people were Anglican. So. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they got Archdeacon Little here early in the early 1911, 1912, somewhere in there.
Did you hear that earlier?
I think so. Wasn't Mrs. Little one of the first teachers in Athabasca? His wife, I don't know, maybe it was before they were married.
See, I can remember Archdeacon Little as long as I can remember, but I didn't know that he was here that early.
I'm not quite sure, unless I'm mistaken, but, you know.
Because he
was here for a long time.
Yeah, he was.
But he used to stop in here all the time when he was going back and forth.
Right.
And,
I always remember him. It wouldn't matter if it was raining cats and dogs, it's a lovely day.
Is that right? So this area wasn't known as Fairhaven then until the school was built, is that right?
Yeah. And the border was right here at Paul's place,
I see.
You know.
And then the other was...
And then they made Big Cooley of the district in between. I guess they just made Big Cooley.
Because Mercury didn't come until sometime
there.
Later.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't remember when that Mercury came.
I remember
probably
when
Mercury... 38, eh? I imagine.
Oh, maybe...
And what's for that? Good.
Oh, no, certainly. I was thinking maybe later.
Later? Even later? Maybe?
Okay.
Yeah,
I'd be there then.
He'd be there.
In 1938,
I'm guessing it's around that time.
Hmm.
Must have been there before the war, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't mention about your mom teaching school during the war, but Big Cool.
That's right. That was during the war, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking, what grade was I in when your mom was there? 4, 5, and 6, maybe? Did June Laporte come after your mother?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I would have been, because I think June came and I was in junior high, grade 7 and 8, and of course I had to go to Athabasca from my grade 9. So
well,
it would have been
there. Mr. Hudson, I guess, was here when Mom got up there, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah, Mr. Hudson. Yeah, I think she only taught 3 years there, didn't she? Was it 3 years?
Something like that.
Yeah. She didn't ever teach at Fairhaven?
Yeah,
she taught at Fairhaven too, then before she came to Big Cooley.
Yeah, she taught at Fairhaven when we were going to school. In 1927, because I remember we had the old Star car. We used to drive to school.
You drove to school, eh?
Yeah.
And the rest of the kids, of course, everybody, they walk, would they take horseback, would come horseback?
Oh, yeah. Mostly horseback.
Mostly horseback.
Yeah.
Mostly walking, too, everybody, unless, you know, if they were in the field.
Yeah.
Everybody
and you'd have to have some type of building. I recall some type of barn.
Oh, yeah.
When I started school, there were some kids that came on horseback, and we had a barn back there.
Yeah.
It's when I think of it, that's just like a dream now.
The high school at Fairhaven, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Two rooms
school.
Well, they didn't originally have two rooms, though. No.
They had the old school there, and then they built what the high school was, the teacher's. Swanberg lived in the teacher's there when he taught there, and then
Mr. Swanberg?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he left, they converted the teacher's into a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be, what would it be, about 12 by 16? That's a fact.
Well, they put a little bit of addition on.
What?
They put a little addition on. It wasn't very wide.
I don't think it'd be.
I forget how
much. I don't think it'd be any bigger than that.
I forget what was in there. There's a bunch of grade 11.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, what did you do for excitement at school?
We played soccer all winter.
Soccer?
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. We used to play Athabasca soccer, you know. Well, Alf taught over there. He taught the other room, you know.
Yeah, your brother came to substitute, I think, for a while. I don't know if your mom was sick or what, but I remember Alfred came to teach for a while.
Up here?
At Big Cooley.
Or was it wouldn't be Bernard?
Maybe it was Bernard.
Yeah,
then.
I remember he went there for
a few
days. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you played soccer? You must have played baseball or fastball?
Oh, yeah, some of that. But we used to get a kick out of that soccer business, you know. We'd have it just like
the top of the table. You wouldn't let anybody stay in the room during the recess. He took everybody outside.
Now, when you say he, who was your teacher then?
Elf.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
Big brother.
Kicked all the girls and everything else and out. So we play down there all the time.
Oh, I'm surprised about soccer.
It'd be just like a floor, and then we, you know, Plow was teaching in Athabasca, you see, so Elf and
arranged games, eh?
Arranged the games there against Athabasca. Well, they thought they were going to
clean up on you.
Clean up on these country hicks, you know, because right. they played lots of hockey. They figured their combination would be good, you know. Yeah. So they came out here to play. No, we went in there first to play, and they had snow that deep on there. So we beat them 2-1 in there, and then they came back out to here for a return game, and we beat them 5-0.
What year would that have been?
38, maybe 37, 38 or 39. Bill Richards, you see, he was going to high school in town then, you see, and he was a goalkeeper. Oh. I was here when I got a break in on him, you know. One of us went to one side and Bill went over there and the other guy put here and we just let it dribble through the corner. Bill says, "You sons of bitches."
But before that time when I went to school, about the highlight of the sports was to go to one other school in the spring to play, have a game of softball. You know?
Right.
We used to make a trip over to Youngville there. And I think I went to Grayville once. But we were talking about this a few years ago with Joe Repian over there. And we used to play against, Joe was playing for Youngville at that time, you know. And he was reminded me of one time they went to Grayville, and of course nobody had a vehicle to go in, you know, and that's a long ways to Grayville. Yeah. So old Bill Smousey there had a one-ton truck, that one that's sitting in there behind Stitching, I think, yet, you know. It's got a wooden box on it. Johnny had it in the parade there a few years ago. I think it's a 1929. And Bill had this thing, and of course it was spanking new, you know. So these guys, Joe and these guys, approached old Bill to drive them over to Grayville. And old Bill was pretty careful with his pennies, you know.
Yeah,
he'd drive them over 10 cents a piece. So they had to dig up 10 cents a piece for pay old Bill to drive them over to Grayville. Of course, that was a lot better than walking, you know.
Was that one way or both ways?
Well, I think it was round trip.
Round trip.
Yeah.
For heaven's sakes.
But,
interesting. Would you have had concerts at school then? I suppose concerts.
Oh, yeah,
social?
that was a
box big, socials?
Yeah, box socials, mm-hmm. Concerts.
What other social activities would you have had, say?
Election time, the politicians had come around. That was a big deal. Everybody went to those things.
Oh,
you know?
Of course.
Sure.
Yes. And the school, I suppose, was sort of a center of social activity, wasn't
sure.
it, at that time?
Yeah, it was the only thing in the district.
Where would your family have gone to church? You people were Catholic.
Athabasca.
So yeah. The church, that's right, would have been there, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. So you had to get going by sleigh, or of course your dad had a vehicle then.
Well, in the wintertime, we'd always go by sleigh.
You wouldn't go when it was cold. You usually get there midnight mass, and that's about it.
Yeah.
It's spring.
Right.
Because the car was always put up in blocks all winter.
Hmm. So your neighbors were quite cooperative. Would you get together for visits or Christmas?
Well,
or?
There was one time in around the, I guess it was in the hardest times in the 30s there, when they used to have card parties all over the district. They go one place one weekend and
another house another day.
Just make the rounds. I remember George Rogers, he used to go to the East and he used to play bridge. I think it was bridge I played, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob McCorch used to tell a good story about him. He,
Well, George, of course, everybody go to these card parties, they have to take their kids, you know, right. because they couldn't leave them home.
Right.
So if there's any little kid that was starting to act up, well, old George would take it on his knee, you know, and make faces at it and get the kid feeling all right. And then at lunchtime, he'd take two pieces of cake, one for the kid and one for himself, and then he'd break the kid's piece in half and he'd eat the ice and give the kid the bottle.
Edith's dad
you're talking about now. Yeah. Edith's dad? Yeah. Don't you remember him?
Yes, I do. I remember him now. Yeah. You were talking about these card parties. I remember when I was a little older that they used to have these surprise parties that were such fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'd go from every Saturday, they'd have a different place. And you know, you could be, I remember distinctly one night we went to bed and Dad used to take the mm-hmm. chopped wood, and he would make these bits of shavings. Mommy, he'd open that oven door of the wood stove and he'd place these nice and get dried out for the fire in the morning and we all went to bed and my gosh, all of a sudden we had all this racket outside and at the door. And here was the surprise party at our place this night. But those seemed to be quite popular for a long time. And they'd be dancing and singing, I remember, and just having themselves a good time.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't have much.
I can remember both the first entertainment like that I ever went to. I don't know how old I'd be. It couldn't have been more than four or five or something like that, but there was an old couple that lived down here on the next quarter to us by the name of Eastman. They homesteaded that. And this old lady was a kind of a character. She smoked a pipe, corn cob pipe. And she wouldn't let the men ever see her smoke this pipe, but she'd run out of tobacco. She and old Jim lived there together. They're an old couple. And she'd run out of tobacco, and then she'd come up here and come to Mom, see if Dad had any old cigars around, you know, that she could get for tobacco. So, of course, Mom would always dig her up for a cigar someplace, and then she'd get a few puffs in the house, and if she saw Dad coming in the house, well, she'd shove this pipe into her pocket, you know, and the house would be blue with smoke, you know.
She didn't know a thing about it.
Yeah. And what I was going to tell you, one time they had it was a chicken raffle, I remember. I don't know whether the idea was to get rid of the chickens in the fall or what it was, but these things were all dressed, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they all got together. I remember going down there that time, and of course all the kids came who were taken, and they were thrown on a bed there, and the ones that fell asleep were all right, and the ones that stood up were all right. But I remember them having this chicken raffle, and old McCullough was the auctioneer, and they were selling these chickens. But I think it was
gathering, that's what it was.
Well, it was social gathering, but maybe it was to get rid of the chickens, too.
The chickens.
Because there's no place to sell them, you see.
Oh, I see.
You know?
You don't remember how high the bid would go.
No, I can't remember that.
Yeah, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Well, that was, I can just barely remember that, you know.
I suppose people had to put in big gardens in those days.
Oh, yeah. There was no money.
There was no money. Eh?
No, heck no. There was no money then. There was no money until the war, really.
Is that right?
Heck, I remember Norman Johnson. He was a guy that homesteaded there on Golden Lake Road, just south of Frank Crawford's.
Mm-hmm.
He used to work here harvesting and sometimes help us put the crop in, you know. And he was on relief.
Was he? Oh, there was relief then.
There was relief, but all he could get. He had a fair size family. I don't know how many was in his family, four or five or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But all he could get for relief was about $4 or $5 a month, you know. And he could pack it all home on his back, and that's the way he did. That's
you mean
what he
they
did.
Didn't have to get the money? They would get goods?
No, they wouldn't give them.
They would vouchers.
Voucher.
Oh, they would give them a voucher.
Yeah.
And then he'd go and buy some of the things
he needed. And you can imagine, well, of course, I'll bet you $5 then bought more than $50 now, you know. But just the same, you know, it was pretty skimpy going, you know.
What if he helped you put the crop in, for example, or take it off, what would your dad pay him? Have you any idea?
Well, in those times, about $3 a day for harvest.
Gosh, well,
I think that's too much.
Mm-hmm. Or a dollar and a half?
No, maybe a dollar a day.
No. Yeah. Not for harvest.
What did he pay him for stupid? He and Paul the Bicycle used to stupid.
Well, I think it was $3 a day for harvest.
Maybe
that seems a lot. When
that seems too much.
When they would only get $5 a month for for relief, mind you. That was relief. But
Well, there was just no...
There were no other
jobs, you know.
No. So, yeah. But I remember my father said that when he first started farming, when the harvest was over here, he used to go to Big Valley and places like that in southern Alberta, or part of southern.
Yeah,
coal.
Pardon? In the coal mines?
I don't think he did.
Harvesting.
But he'd go harvesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was one way, and then he used to trap for us.
Well, I remember I went harvesting one year, 1939. And we finished harvesting here early in September. And Ralph Horton and I went down to Carstairs, and there was, they hadn't hardly started. As a matter of fact, we went down there and we'd still stooped for 2 or 3 days.
Gosh.
And then we went thrashing, and we thrashed for a couple of weeks, and then a big snowstorm came, and we were going to go home, and they said, oh, you better stick around, the Chinook will come along. We'll be thrashing again in a few days, you know. So we hung around there and for about a week, and things didn't look any brighter. And it was 40 below, so we decided to come home, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what other things would there have been for a farmer to? What other way could he need some extra money?
Some of them
hauled wood to town.
All wood to town. Mm-hmm. Yes.
$2 a load.
$2 a load.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember old Brownie Boystack, he said he hauled wood all winter for $2 a load. And another guy is John Era, south of town there. He said the Depression never bothered me, he said. I never had any money before the Depression came. And all through the Depression, I sold a load of wood every day during the winter for $2.
And he was all
and,
right.
And he said, I never had... maybe spend 15 cents once in a while for a game of pool, and that was the extent of his his entertainment, you know. So, and some of them, I remember Paul Cavlock and Mike Burtis, when they first came here, they said they went to the coal mines.
Yes.
For the winter, you know.
So there is some way. Now we must have mentioned about five, making ties and railway ties and coal mines and harvesting and
fishing.
Fishing? Oh, is that right?
There wasn't very many around. Well, Nelson's and over on the other road there, they used to go, Overalls, they used to go fishing all the time.
Carl Cross.
Yeah.
And would they sell to the local people here in town?
Well, they sell to Macintosh. They sell them on the lake most
of
them.
Oh, I see.
There'd be fish buyers there. Oh, Macintosh.
Oh,
he used to buy
right,
fish.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was another thing we did too. I remember Dad and I hauled fish from Mont Kirkpatrick, and Oscar Goslin were living up there. They'd haul them down as far as, these were fresh fish, and they'd ship them to New York, I guess. And they'd catch them that day and pack them in ice, and they'd bring them down the next day to Mont's place, and we'd meet them there, and then we'd take them on into town. And Jeff Cole could take them in the truck to the city, and they'd put them in a refrigerator car and ship them to New York. But I remember one time, we just did this one haul, and We left Mons about 8 o'clock at night, and we traveled all night. Well, we came back as far as here, and got here about midnight, fed the horses, and then went on into town. It was 60 below when we went down the hill there. You just about had a walk all the way, you know.
We were telling somebody at school one day, not too long ago, that it was 60 below, and they found it hard to believe, and I said, believe it, because it used to. I remember walking across the river to school when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And the river, I don't know, I guess Uncle Paul was driving the bus then. Yeah. He couldn't drive across. And of course, it was too late for the ferry, and I don't know whether it was what happened to the cage business, but we walked across anyway, and it was 60 below. We were told.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, talking about driving horses and all that. I have a picture at home of my dad beside a small airplane. Who would have had a plane here in this area? It was on the river.
Macintosh.
That'd be Joe
Butcher.
Gerard Shoemaker.
No, before that.
Joe Irvin?
It'd be Joe Irvin, I bet you, flying through for Macintosh.
It was just Dad himself, and I knew he never, you know, never flew a plane or never had one. But I was wondering, it looked like he was on a river or something, driving on the river. And I wondered, well, why would he, you know, and you don't look at these pictures when they're alive, you never, don't ask them, and they're missing.
Most pictures you go to look at, you don't even know who's in them anymore, you know.
Right,
he should be all written on the back of them.
How would do you remember your dad clearing land?
Oh, yeah.
How would he have gone about that?
Well, in 1927, he hired 4 German guys. And one of them was Mike Schmidt across the river here. Another one was John Era. Another one was Joe Era. And then there was another cousin, Salva Era. And these 4 fellas came to Canada, and they were in, John Era was just telling me about this the other day, about a year or two ago. I never really knew how they got here, but I remember when they came. But they came to Winnipeg, and that was a kind of a dispersal area for immigrants, you see. And anyway, they were in this immigration hall there, and
here at Athabasca, only in Winnipeg, all right.
And John was telling me he had about $5 left, and Mike had about $5. Joe Era had a few more dollars, but it came over the PA system that there's a Archie Gorman at Athabasca wanted 4 men for clearing land. And they heard this name Gorman, and they kind of connected with government, you know, and they figured it was a government job or something.